Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, and I want to welcome you to this Connected Insurance Podcast presented by Agency Revolution, creators of the most powerful marketing and communication software for property and casualty retail agents. So, whether you want to attract more clients into your marketing funnel, or create deeper, stronger relationships with your existing customers, reach out to Agency Revolution, get a demo of their award-winning software today. One of the challenges that I have in presenting so many of my podcast interviews is this temptation to say, this one is a really important conversation, and I don't know how to say that differently every single week, but there are some that really stand out as something that serious agents and serious professionals in the industry really should listen to. This is one of those. My guest today is Greg Williams. Greg, I'll read a little bit of his bio so you get a sense of his background, and then I'm going to throw you right into the conversation. He is changing the game in the industry. A lot of people may not have heard Greg's name, but if you are paying attention to what's happening in the industry right now, some of the forces and trends that I talk about in my State of the Industry address, Greg's behind them. Greg Williams, Gregory L. Williams, is an accomplished entrepreneur and business leader who successfully founded and managed three companies throughout the course of his career in May 2005. This is probably where you'll know him. Greg co-founded Acrisure for the purpose of investing in independent insurance agencies around the globe with a compounded annual growth rate of over 80% since inception. That's pretty good. My clients, I like to brag, get a 25 to 40% growth rate. It's organic, but 80%. Acrisure is now among the 10 largest. I think it's number 9. Insurance brokers in the world, most profitable compared to its peers. He's led Acrisure since its inception, and it's now roughly $1.5 billion agency and developed through a culture of collaboration and significant organic growth. In 2016, Greg led a management buyout of Acrisure's private equity investor in a $2.9 billion transaction. As a result, the company now has a majority owned. It's actually 83%. By the management team and its operating partners with board control as well. He'll talk about this, and I think it's important to listen. This is not a private equity firm. This really is the 9th largest agency. In addition, Greg has been a board advisor to a variety of companies from 1981 to 1990. Greg was vice president for Michigan National Corporation, a $19 billion bank holding company, as a senior executive there. He managed the commercial sales and service group, was a member of the corporate marketing committee, and chaired the corporate operations committee. Greg's married to Dawn and has a daughter, Megan, and a son, Michael. Listeners know that I kind of shift between big trends and forces and practical stuff. Sometimes practical stuff you can get done by Thursday at 11 o'clock. In this case, there's a little bit of both, but frankly, a lot of it is, it's not just a very careful examination of some of the trends, but I think it's important for those of us who are listening and engaging in this conversation that Greg is to some extent driving at least one of those trends, and I think probably more, at least one more, and if you listen carefully, you pick up on what I'm talking about when Greg talks about the nature of the independent insurance agency and their relationship to the customer and the sanctity of that relationship with the customer. And he also shares fairly openly how Acrisure is mining those relationships in a unique way. So please pay attention to this. So one of the quotes that For those of you who follow me, perhaps on whatever, one of the social programs, which I'll talk about in a moment, you might notice I take a lot of notes when I'm speaking with somebody and occasionally write down one that just sticks with me. I told Greg this was a writer downer, and it was this: changes are vast, but slow enough that a lot of agents won't notice it. And I said, that strikes me as a very dangerous position for the industry. And he agreed. Changes are vast, but perhaps so slow that a lot of agents won't even notice. So one last thing I will mention before moving on. If you would like to follow me, I will give you a very quick snapshot. I've been lazy and pretty much non-existent on social media for a year and a half, which is roughly when I sold the company, or when I was so deep in negotiations I didn't have time for anything else. I am slowly crawling back to life in the public sphere, besides this podcast, which has always been a great privilege and honor for me. I'm slowly creeping back to life on social. If you would like to follow me on Instagram, great. What you will discover there is a little bit of insurance, naturally, what I'm up to in regards to who I'm engaging with in the podcasts and so on and so forth. But a little bit of the casita lifestyle. It's really difficult for me not to take the 40-step commute from the big house to the casita without taking a picture of the sunrise or whatever happens to be happening in the desert. That kind of stuff. But you're welcome. Follow me on Instagram. I've made the decision. I'm going to start getting active again on LinkedIn, and I probably will reactivate my Twitter. So go ahead and follow me, Michael Jans, at all of those various social platforms. So now, without further ado, I'll encourage you to pay attention to this guy. He's one of the smart ones. And, you know, like he said, bought 92 agencies last year. So that's kind of like Monday, Thursday of every week, take off a holiday every now and then, buy an agency. Haven't seen that for a long time. And this year, I think it's over 100 agencies that Acrisure is purchasing. So they're changing things. Pay attention and enjoy the conversation. Greg Williams, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Terrific, Michael. Happy to be here.
Okay. So I think to some extent, I do want to dive into your brain to talk about what you're doing at Acrisure. But I am interviewing Greg the man. So why don't we start with a short bio of your background, because you've got an interesting career and history before you even became engaged with Acrisure. So a little thumbnail sketch, if you would, about what you've done.
Sure. So Acrisure would be the third business that I started, and came out of the banking industry in the 80s. So it sounds like I'm talking about three lifetimes ago, and it feels like three lifetimes ago. But in the banking industry in the 80s, I was really looking to do something entrepreneurial and build a business. So I started a business in the telecom industry in 1990, a very unique opportunity that was still to this day maybe the best business that I've seen.
Uh-huh.
In terms of business opportunity. And you'll hear some themes here that are consistent with the insurance brokerage space, but it was a business or an industry that had, or an opportunity, I should say, that had high recurring revenue, nice profit margins, low CapEx requirements, and so it was it's what kind of drew me from banking into the entrepreneurial life, if you will. And so started that in 90, sold it in 93. It was a legislatively created opportunity that I knew was legislatively going to be taken away at some point. So it was a get in and build fast and get out. So did that 90 and 93. Started at 90, sold it 93. 1993 started an investment banking company, and for 12 years was running around the U.S. and Europe, mm-hmm. doing a lot of M&A activity in a lot of different industries, working primarily with private equity funds.
Yeah.
And in 2005, so did that from 93 to 2005. In 2005, started Acrisure with another gentleman who basically had an insurance background. I had a financial background. We got together with a thesis that we could go out and build something in the industry that was unique and different from a model perspective, and in terms of how to build a business through M&A with a different approach that we thought would be compelling and of interest to the marketplace. So that was kind of how we got started. So I have a financial background that's now for the last 12 years, I guess, 13 years now, really in the insurance brokerage space and now reinsurance brokerage, and having a lot of fun doing what we're doing.
Well, you identified recurring revenue in this industry. So from a private equity point of view, that's kind of where the gold is, isn't it?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. When I looked at this, the industry in 2004 for the first time, it was really a situation where I said, you know what? There's going to be a day that private equity comes banging on this door.
Right.
And the reason is, I mean, just not very many industries have the high recurring revenue, the nice profit margins, the low capex requirements.
Uh-huh.
It's just the financial fundamentals are such that it's appealing. For all those reasons to a lot of people. And so those are the things that, frankly, drew me to it back in 2004, 2005 as well.
Recurring revenue is obviously a common theme in the world that I came from in software, and private equity does seem to find that really attractive. So it's interesting that that an industry that's been around for so many hundreds of years also has a similarities in the business model that make it so attractive to investors. So I guess one of the things that I do want to dive into is that on one hand, Greg, Acrisure is not the only private equity firm in the property and casualty space. It would seem that there are a lot of buyers and that it is dramatically more. The number of private equity firms that are, competing for M&A to some extent is it's 10x what it was when I was, first got into the industry. Why do you think that is? What's different about the world now that makes it so attractive than it was, let's say, before you got into it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I wanted to, I think it's important to correct the narrative here, but,
okay.
So Acrisure is not a private equity company.
Okay. Right.
We are a business that, we're an operating company. We've built the business over the last 13 years. We're the ninth or 10th largest insurance.
Yeah, I had a feeling that when I think in my last communication with you, I said the 12th largest, and I had a feeling that's probably old news now. That's got to be six months ago.
We're almost $1.5 billion in revenue and used some private equity capital to help scale.
Yeah.
In 2013, I brought on a private equity group and used their capital to help us scale the business. But in 2016, we did a management buyout. And as we see here today, we own 83% of the business. When I say we, the people work in the business every day. We have outside investors that own 17, but we own the majority, and then we control the board. We're not controlled by an outside investor.
Right. Congratulations.
So we're actually... if you look at private companies with size and scale, we're about the only one out there that it has the dynamics I just described, where we own the majority of the business and we control it, as opposed to a private equity fund.
Okay.
So I think that's there is confusion in the marketplace as to whether we are private equity controlled or private equity
owned. A little
owned.
Bit, yeah. They're a little bit.
And we're neither. So.
Okay.
But having said that, to your question, Michael, I think the if you look at just in the world where there are places that you can invest, and smart investors will seek out opportunities regardless of where they are and what industry and so forth. But the dynamics of the industry, the demand for the product is rather static, in that insurance is not going away. It's a need that there's going to always be a great deal of demand for.
Right.
So the combination of demand, and you can get into the whole debate about whether it's a commodity or people really differentiate themselves and offer services and advice that others don't, and which we believe certainly in our case that we do. And
oh, okay. I didn't want you to skip over that one. Let's just zero in on that one for a moment. What do you think? Are we fighting the perception that insurance is a commodity in the marketplace?
You know what? I think there is an element of that. And frankly, I think the insurance industry, to some extent, has been its own worst enemy, in that we haven't probably done a really good job of defining, what product and services really are available and the depth of that. In many ways, when I say that, I'm not, casting dispersions on any one firm or one company. It's really, I think, the industry as a whole has been viewed as a bit of a commodity product. And so I think those that have been successful organically growing the business, not just through M&A,
right,
have certainly done a good job of differentiating themselves. And I think the world is going to change, is changing, and I think it's one of those you either grasp where it's going and what's going on in the marketplace, and if you do, you'll succeed.
Okay.
I won't say you have wild success, but you'll wildly succeed compared to others that are not going to embrace the changes going on in the industry, because I think the changes are vast, and it's happening slow enough that people aren't noticing it, but it's the changes are going to be vast if you look at the next 3, 4, 5, certainly 10 years, but over the next, call it 5 years, I think we're going to trade differently, and what the marketplace looks like will be different as well.
All right. So, Greg, you just gave me a writer downer, and I'm going to read it back to you. You can tell me, is this a Greg Williams quote? That the changes are vast, but they're slow enough that people don't notice it.
I think that's accurate.
Okay. All right. That strikes me perhaps as a very, very dangerous position for an industry to be in.
I think it is, and I'll give you just a sample of what I'm talking about. So it won't be nebulous here. If you look at the marketplace, and there's a lot of discussion in the world around value chain and value chain compression. If you look at the retail client is paying us, a retail broker, in terms of premiums, they're placing premiums with us. So we turn around and place those premiums with wholesalers, MGAs, MGUs, insurance companies, and the like. Insurance companies are turning around and taking some of that risk and laying off some of that risk to reinsurance companies, to a reinsurance broker. And then ultimately, there's the underwriting capital or the capital markets that are underpinning the entire industry. So when you look at that value chain.
Well described, by the way. Yes, that's a comprehensive description of the value chain. All right, so then what?
Yeah, so if you look at that value chain, there's a lot of things. If you look at InsurTech, there's a lot of those people that are in that chain or companies that are in that chain that are looking to leapfrog others and get closer to, frankly, the thing that we as a retail broker enjoy. We have the client relationship, so everyone's trying to get closer to that client relationship. Well,
right.
InsurTech investment is the way that they're doing that or attempting to do it. And in other cases, it's just going to be simply where you can place business in that chain is going to be different than what it is today. I think that's the change that I say the change is going to be vast, but it's not being recognized necessarily today, or the recognition of it will take time. Is I think those that, and it's two things. It's really, do you have size and scale, and do you have data? If you've got some size and scale and data, the information about your clients and the premium and where it's placed and the lines of business and all of the various components, exposure, loss data, et cetera, all the things that are going to be important, that are important to the end of the chain, when I say the end of the chain, the insurance and reinsurance companies and the capital markets, that's the information, and that's kind of the gold nugget, if you will, of the things that they're looking for. And if you have it, you'll have opportunities to place business with markets that you otherwise would not. And so I think that's where the change is going to take place. And I think if you're positioned for it and understand that it's coming, you're in a great place. And if you're not positioned for it and don't understand that that's happening, over time, not today, not even maybe over the next couple of years, but certainly if you think of 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I think it, you know, the market and where we're placing premium as a retail P&C, primarily P&C business, it is going to change as time goes on, and there'll be opportunity to differentiate yourself because of that.
Okay, so if you're open to exploring that for a moment, I think I'm talking to the CEO of essentially the ninth largest retail insurance agency in the United States. Obviously, you are looking at that future and navigating some strategy to be prepared for. What do you think what does that future look like in practical terms, do you think?
Yeah, I think for us, it's anticipating this a while ago. We started building a proprietary technology. Mm-hmm. It started literally over now almost 2 years ago, that we started building a capability to really take a deep dive into our business and understand where it's placed in terms of the marketplace, and then based on have an in-depth, granular, analytical view of our business, mm-hmm. understanding where in the marketplace could we take that premium and those clients and make sure that they're getting the maximum amount of value for their insurance spend is what it's all about. And so representing our clients in the most robust, deeply thoughtful way that we can is really the goal. And so the data and the mining of the information, it really allows us to do that. And then it's the same data that allows us to then go to the marketplace and represent our clients in markets that they weren't being represented in before.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so, as an example, would we a year ago have been in a position to where we could have a conversation with either a carrier or a reinsurance company on a detailed level in terms of, again, representing clients' best interests and having the opportunity from an economic perspective to benefit ourselves as well as the client?
Right.
The answer is no, we wouldn't have been. Whereas today we're well positioned to do that because of the level of information and the data that we have about markets and clients both. Where we can bring all of that together in a way that, it's a win for everyone.
All right. I want to ask you, I want to stay on this topic, but I want to look at it from a different perspective. So let's fast forward to this point whenever, next month or next year or 3 years from now, where there's a real transformation in the relationship then. Using this data, ultimately the person who is most effective or most affected or certainly one of those most affected is the customer.
Yep.
How do you, ultimately, if we're not satisfying the customer, right, then there's serious trouble. The customer has a growing number of choices. And as you mentioned, InsurTech is probably offering up a portfolio of choices now and in the very near future. And so fast forward and let's say we create the retail agency of our dreams. What's that customer experience? How have we changed the way the customer experiences their relationship with the retail agent?
Well, I think first it's important to recognize, which I believe, in this, I think most of your audience, maybe not all, but most of your audience will as well if they're, retail P&C driven in orientation, is mm-hmm. that we have what everyone wants,
right,
which is the client relationship. That's the whole
right.
underpinning
okay.
of InsurTech investment is how does somebody else get closer to our client? And so I think recognizing that we have the one thing in the value chain that everybody wants is the client relationship, I think is important to note that we do have that relationship that others want. And And so as you look at InsurTech investments as disintermediation from a technology standpoint, mm-hmm. I mean, there are some of those things going to be successful, sure.
Right.
I think that's likely to be the case. But I think it's also as you start looking at what do we offer in terms of a service, and when I say that, an advisory service to clients, that's the ultimate valuation or value creation element of that relationship, is that we're bringing solutions and information to them they're not just going to get through an online portal. And, you know, going to
right.
some
okay.
you know, website that says, here's your buying options. And I think the whole point to the value chain and compression that will happen there and having information, the data, as well as markets, is it what it does, it just broadens the scope of what's available in terms of the universe of opportunities for a client, what's available to them that they may not know about if uh-huh. they're on an online portal for a certain carrier or a certain technology company. So I think what the information does, I mean, the power is in the data and the information, is mm-hmm. it gives us optionality that a client may not have today because we're now better equipped to really take the client and understand the needs in a way in terms of the insurance spend and where those dollars can and what those dollars can purchase. In terms of coverage and terms and everything else, we're now in a place to really maximize that that spend, and in terms of the value that it's getting in the marketplace and the representation it has in the marketplace. So I think that's the key, is you've got the client relationship, if you have all the information and all the data, not just about the client but about the markets, and the markets are embracing us in a way because of the information and the way we're representing that client. I think that's where optionality and value gets created in terms of that relationship. That gets very sticky and very hard for maybe someone with a website
right.
to disrupt. And so, I think it is that's where this thing the perfect, you know, as you asked the question of the perfect retail broker, what does it look like?
Right.
I think it's a combination of technology and capabilities there that we have ourselves, information and data that we have about the client as well as the markets to best align where the maximization and optimization of spend is. Obviously, highly connected to the client in terms of understanding what the business issues and the risks associated with the business
uh-huh.
really are.
Yeah.
Again, very hard to do from a online and portal.
Hard. Wouldn't you say also just plain hard to do old school, like pre-technology, when now agencies have thousands of customers, and the fact is, I think if you ask the average agency principal if they were walking down the ice cream aisle at the grocery store, they might go right by a client and neither of them would recognize each other. Whereas in the old day, that was what the industry was built upon.
Yeah, exactly right. I think the relationship side of the business is important.
Right.
But understanding that it has to be more than just a relationship today, I think is also important as well. So the relationship is key. But to continue to service and provide a real value to that relationship, I think it is the standard of entry, if you will, is getting more difficult.
And okay, so I just want to dig into that one for a moment. So when you're referring to the relationship side, it's like, you know, the person to person, human to human, you know, a little bit of an emotional connection, ideally something that leads towards loyalty, right? So the
yep.
Okay. But then I think you're also saying there's another, the other side of the coin is having the data to know that customer and to know that your customer, your book of business well enough that you can provide, really drill down and provide superior service and markets. Am I getting that?
Exactly.
Okay.
The data and the information about the client and the client's needs and be able to take that to a market
that is
greatly expanding. When I say that, it's expanding by the month. Where you can place that business is, and the optionality around that is that's what's changing in our world. And when I say our world, the retail PNC world, I think that's where the market's most changing is when you look at that value chain, and you know, from client all the way down to capital markets and all of the kind of the mouths being fed in between.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is going to get compressed as time goes on as to where you're placing market in that chain, where you're placing business in that chain. I think that's going to be the greatest change as time goes on, assuming you have an in-depth understanding of the client represented by information and data. And if you have that, you'll have people that are open to talking to you that maybe haven't been for, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, a year ago.
Right.
And so I think that's where you're going to see a lot of change in the kind of the value chain is going to get compressed as time goes on. Uh-huh. If you have certain components and elements, and at the end of the day, who wins in that? The clients.
Right.
The clients ultimately are the winners in that that advancement and that improvement.
So if we move, move forward in the calendar for a few years, we often talk about the client or the customer base as if there's like, you know, the great unwashed masses of 300 million Americans or whatever. But in fact, I mean, it would seem that when we drill down to the customer moving forward, there are those who are really appropriate, optimal for what you're talking about, and then probably some who are just not, that maybe are more appropriate for other channels like Geico, or Progressive Direct. What are your thoughts on that? Client selection is often, you know, sort of that's the gold nugget of good marketing. And so when we approach the marketplace moving forward, Who do you think is the optimal, how would you describe, what are the characteristics of the optimal client for our channel?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It won't surprise you that my answer will be something that looks very similar to our business.
But okay, right.
The small to middle market, that is the basis of majority of our business is small to middle market, commercial business clients. That's predominantly the U.S. marketplace is certainly most represented by that SME, and so I think that's where I think the greatest amount of opportunity will come to in terms of the things I'm talking about as far as change in the market and change in where business is placed and the value chain and what that looks like going forward. I think that's who is going to get impacted the most by having options they've never had before.
Right.
So if you look at the personal lines client, the home and auto, I think there's going to be, as you said, the Geicos and others. I mean, there's going to be options that they have as well, and I think that's, in my view, time will tell, but my view, that's probably where the InsurTech movement has the most impact, is more of the personal lines than say the commercial lines. So I think that's where that impact is going to be seen. And so do we have personal lines clients? Sure. We work hard to make sure that they have the max amount of optionality, and we've got, we're a good advisor to them, et cetera, sure. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where you probably see disintermediation and disruption is, my guess, is going to be more the personal
or
lines.
On that side? Okay.
Yeah, and on that side. And in the commercial lines and even the small commercial lines, I think that's it's still where that relationship, that client relationship, and owning that is going to be, very, very significant in terms of the viability of whatever business you have going forward.
Got it. All right. Yeah, so I think this is a good segue to if you would share what you want to about the vision of AccuSure, what you're trying to accomplish and what that looks like, what the future of your company ideally looks like.
Well, we're just tremendously excited about what we've done and the future, frankly, looks even brighter than the past. And so if you look at we're about $1.5 billion of revenues we see here today. The company itself is 83%+ owned by the people that work in the business every day. Mm-hmm. So we've done a lot of M&A activity, 92 deals last year. We'll do about 110 deals this year. So a lot of new partners. Is a very different model in that the company is owned by the people that work in it every day. Outside financial parties do have capital invested, and they own 17%, and we control the board. We're not a company that's controlled by them. So we have permanence of our model, which, as you may know, we don't brand AccuSure. We're doing a lot of M&A where the brand of the companies we're partnering with, those brands are retained.
Right.
Ownership interest is retained. Mm-hmm. It's in AccuSure, not in their own company. Mm-hmm. And so as we continue to grow, we're also creating a lot of wealth for the right people as we continue to grow.
Yeah.
And so there's permanence of model. People have been attracted to that and find it as a kind of a friendlier way to perpetuate their ownership interest, maintaining very good relationships with their employees because we're not changing or disrupting the companies that we partner with. And so the retaining brand, the retaining the way they pay their people, et cetera. So,
right.
So that what we've found is this has been not just a model that's been attractive to the U.S., but we're now growing internationally in a fairly significant way as we see here today.
I did not know that. Where are you?
Yeah, so 4% of our revenue right now is outside of North America. I think that's probably 10% by the end of next year, end of 19.
Interesting. Okay.
So we're excited about that, and what we found is that the reasons that people in the U.S. want to do a deal with us are the very same reasons internationally. And and so for all those reasons, we are taking advantage of bringing something to the marketplace that's different. And as a result of that, those that have reached out to us have made it known that, look, if you come to places like the U.K. and other parts of the globe, we have an opportunity to grow there, and so we are. And so I think the likely scenario is by the end of next year, end of 2019, I think we're probably a $2 billion company.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll grow about 60% this year. Last year was 60% as well. And so for a sizable company, we continue to grow at a pretty accelerated pace. And again, it's the appeal of what we have to offer is permanence of home, not disrupting brand names and companies, not changing relationships with employees. And yet we have all of the resources and services and technology, et cetera, that a $1.5 billion company,
right,
you'd expect a $1.5 billion company to have. So we offer all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We just do it in a way where there's optionality as to whether they use those services or not. So they opt in or opt out,
right,
as they see fit. So we're really trying to support the local entrepreneurs and maintain that entrepreneurial culture locally. And so just add all the resources that a big company can bring, just do it in a way that doesn't disrupt their day-to-day lives, and they use whatever resources they're looking for. So that's what distinguishes us and differentiates us and why we're growing the way that we are. And maybe to your question earlier, I think people think that we're either private equity controlled or that we're even a private equity fund. We're neither.
Right.
And I think that's been a big part of the appeal as well.
Okay. In a moment, Greg, I'm going to ask you to share how people can make contact, not necessarily with you. I know you're incredibly busy, but with AccuSure, and to find out more about it. But I want to ask you one last question before I do that. And this is, to If you could deliver a message to the industry, and obviously not everybody is quite ready to be, you know, to even have a conversation with you, right?
Sure.
And there are, you know, obviously thousands and thousands of agents who, for whatever reason, the time in their career, their age, whatever personal choices they want to push forward with, obviously the independent model and, you know, maintain their own equity for now. If you could deliver a message, because you've created a fairly dramatic picture about the future, how the future is different than today. If you were going to deliver a message that you think, mattered, that really meant something to the industry today, what would you want to say?
Well, I think that's a great question.
Tell me the most important thing in the world right now. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's one that I could go on for a while, but I think in the matter of a few minutes that we have, the change is coming.
Okay.
And you've got to be prepared for it. I mean, this is an industry that, for the most part, you referenced earlier, for the most part, has been unchanged for the last couple hundred years.
Right.
I mean, what the business looks like, how we attract and retain clients, the trading relationships that exist, all that's been kind of the same for the last couple hundred years. I do think that's going to change going forward. I think there's a cost and a barrier to retaining clients that's going to get more difficult as time goes on. And that's not I'm not saying that to alarm anybody. I think at the end of the day, I mean, the business and the relationships and all those things, if you're a independent agency, or even a single proprietor out there with your own client relationships.
Right.
I mean, fundamentally, the business isn't going to change overnight. I do think over time, and again, I define that as the next 5 years for sure, the world's going to get a bit different in terms of how business is placed, who you can place business with, if you have the right tools, the right capabilities, the right resources, technologies, et cetera. And so I think the competitive profile, the competitive landscape, I think does change over time. And so I think it is coming. And it's, it's not to suggest the independent broker is in peril, quite the opposite. I think it's the independent agent is in a great place as it relates to they have the client relationship.
Right.
It's now you're smart and thoughtful about how you take that relationship and align yourself with the right people, the right resources, the right technologies, et cetera. I think you'll be prepared to be successful for a long, long, long time. It's those that stick their head in the sand and say, look, the world's going to stay the same. It's not going to change, and so forth. I think those are the folks that are going to probably struggle as you think about 5 and 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
I think the world is going to change enough that you won't have the luxury of doing that.
Bill Gates said something along those lines. I think he said we underestimate how much the world is going to change in 10 years, but overestimate how much it's going to change in 2 or 3 years. And so I think you are painting the picture of a world where at some point agents wake up and the world has just radically shifted. So I think you're saying now is the time to get ready.
Well, I think it's time to get ready. And again, I would tell you, if you said the next, I really agree with the quote the thought process is that 10 years from now, I think the world is, the insurance brokerage space is significantly different. Is that going to happen in the next year or two? Probably not.
Right.
But 10 years from now, it's going to be significantly different. In the 10 years, I might even circuit that to 5.
Maybe even 5. Okay.
Yeah. But 10 years for sure, I think we'll start seeing, some of those changes occur in the next 5 years even.
All right. Greg, so if our listeners want to learn more about Acrisure or engage in a conversation, how should they do that?
Well, I would, the easiest is obviously going to be an email. So there's a gentleman that works for us in business development group, Kyle Miller. So nice, easy name. Mm-hmm. And so Kyle could be reached at kmiller@acrisure.com.
Got it. kmiller@acrisure.com. All righty.
Yep, kmiller@acrisure.com.
Very good. All right. Greg, it's been a pleasure having a conversation with you. I really appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule. Thanks so much.
Michael, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.